Read the other poems now. Just kidding.
Does Henry want to do a check? Does Henry want to do a check on each of those?
Sound check?
I really want you to.
No, yeah,
otherwise, it's not official.
Right. Yeah, it's not official unless Amanda does it.
Oh, I know what she is. She says that my other brother, the youngest one, is in the play. I saw it last night. I had it in one hilarious.
Excuse me. I'd like to make an announcement. If anybody's parked in Caledonia Place, that's a bad place to park because we have a really horrible neighbor who will come over here and bang on the door. And
so where's
which one is that?
Right here.
In here.
A bunch of cars all parked across the street.
Yeah, so if anybody's parked in this area here, we can park across the street.
Or at the restaurant.
At the restaurant?
It's not really a restaurant anymore.
Well, maybe they're having a party here.
The abandoned baby shop that way.
There was a restaurant.
The one right outside the door. If you
yeah, right.
Yeah. Bag in.
Yeah. Grace, did you park at the restaurant?
I'm sorry. It's better to keep
the man coming in
the
door.
The man.
No, he knocks on the door in the middle of the reading and yells at us if there's people parked there. So.
Because,
it's good that there's someone like that.
How are you?
All right, you ready?
I'm going to wait for the people to come back with their cars because that's polite.
All right.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Okay, but I don't have it right now. Why don't you back up? Okay, if I can
read them. I can read everyone a poem.
Older
than I
last saw you.
Okay.
Yes.
What?
No, she did. It's a ponytail. The ponytail.
That's partially correct.
There's a series of
ponytail.
The first part of it is correct. The second story.
Yeah, she's also a $100 wearing a dress today that I think she's grown. It's not a dress.
Oh, how did you like that?
I'm doing cold farming.
I'm not cool. I'm not in charge of the lights, but if you tell Henry, then we can also turn all the lights off if you want. And then you'll have to recite from memory.
I would like that. I would like that. All right.
I read three of them. I thought of them when I saw it. I thought, oh, these are short, short. Short stories.
I read it too. All right. Tries to get over to Johnny. That'll be how it goes.
It's making me nervous.
All right. Hi, Grace. I'm glad to see you.
I'm glad to see you too. I'm missing you guys.
I've been missing you too. Yeah. Yeah.
I like the view.
About 4 years.
Thanks.
Yeah, same really thing, Amber.
Really cool.
Right on.
Yeah.
That's what I was looking for.
It reminds me of the Fonz a little bit.
I was telling, I was telling Pete that the guy who cut my hair had this rainbow-colored top knot and had dreadlocks, and like no joke, a few times during the haircut, he'd throw his scissors down and go behind a little window and do money transfers for people, and then come back and start cutting it again.
That sounds awesome.
It sounds like the kind of thing you should pay extra for.
That's what I thought. I was like, this is too great. Like, especially the violence with which he threw down the scissors. Like, what is an imposition? Either cutting hair or getting people money. Glad to see you, Laura.
Just have one more to come back.
All right, let's do it.
Megan. All right, I'm waiting for Megan.
She's gonna take forever.
She probably left. She was like. You want me to talk? Should I start? All right, I have been given direction from an authority that I should start and that I can tell Megan what I'm gonna say later. Exactly. Welcome to the Gloucester Writers Center. I see a lot of new faces here. If you're not on our mailing list, we have a piece of paper on the table back there. If you put your name and email address down, then you'll get an email every week that will tell you everything we're doing. So if you find that you like listening to poetry, which is a big responsibility I've just put on these guys, you can come back and listen to more. I want to tell you about what's coming up. So I want to tell you about what's coming up at the Writer Center in the next month or two. I haven't memorized the list yet, so I apologize for that. Next week on March 5th, we have our open mic at 7:30. Everybody's welcome to come. You bring 5 minutes of work, and you can share it with the crowd. It's a really generous group of listeners, and a very interesting evening every time. On March 7th, we have three poets, Wendy Drexler, Nancy Esposito, and Holly Goran. On March 9th, we have a reading of 10 playwrights and 10 10-minute plays at the Rocky Neck Cultural Center. That is a staged reading from Linda Robinson's playwriting workshop. On March 14th, we have Erica Funkhauser and Soren Stockman, which will also be at the Rocky Neck Cultural Center. On March 29th, we have a very exciting evening, a Meet the Author night with Jacqueline Machard, who, if you don't know her name, she wrote the book that launched the Oprah Book Club. And she wants to come to the Writer Center. So,
nice.
Yeah, you can do that. So, why not, right? We'll take all sorts. So we're really excited to have her coming, and that's a benefit for the Writer Center. There are tickets available online at our website, gloucesterwriters.org. And that will be March 29th, Thursday night at the Azorian. Then in April, we have April 2nd, the open mic again. On April 7th, another benefit, Saxy Poetry and Jazzy Song. Yes, this is from a poet in New Bedford, Everett Hoagland, who's coming up with a couple musicians, a singer and a saxophone player. And
it's Billie Holiday's birthday, too, so if you want to go out and celebrate Billie Holiday's birthday, come to the event.
That's Rocky Neck. Yeah, that's going to be cooler than I am. On April 11th, we have Nasheen Youssef and Matt Miller, and on April 25th, June Hallahan and Fred Marchant. So these are our next couple months here at the Writers' Center. We look forward to seeing you. I also... somehow not listed here, is our next Fish Tales, which is high school students telling stories, and that is March 23rd, and that will be at the Gloucester Stage Company.
24th.
March 24th.
It's the Friday of March.
And that's the 23rd.
Hopefully we haven't 23rd. Screwed it up with 23rd. National events. The 23rd, so you can still go and then book it down to D.C., or wherever your march happens to be that day.
That's right.
Very excited to have these Ward 3 poets.
I'm going to leave the rest of this up to Josh because he's got the scoop on this, but I'm very excited to listen to these fellows read.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you.
We ended up in a line again.
I know.
We can fix that.
That's okay. We're okay.
All right.
I'll fix it in the line.
My part of it. So, last January, right?
Yeah.
I think I walked over to your house. I think it was, I walked over to your house and I said, hey, do you want to write every week? Right?
Yeah. You want to get together.
You want to, yeah.
Write every week.
Yep.
And talk about it.
Yeah.
And I said, that sounds awesome.
Right. And I think I said that to you too, the same week. True or not true?
True. I think I said, I came to you and I said, I want to write, but I need a prompt. How do I get a prompt?
Yeah.
Yes. Then you said, then you had this idea.
So then it was up to you. When did you show up?
Later.
But then somehow,
But
then everybody started, like, first it was me leaving poems on your porch and
my
your porch.
Under a brick.
Under bricks every week on Tuesdays.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then we started sending them around via email because your porch is in Beverly now.
It's at Google, actually.
Yep.
But Beverly, too.
So we did that. But every Friday night we would come to my garage and we would read what we'd written from that week's prompt, which was just a poem that we read in common.
Yes.
And
in front of this wood stove that was a repurposed ammo case.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
This tiny little box.
That's
about
right.
The size of a shoebox.
Yeah.
That we would have to continuously feed scraps of wood into.
See this?
Wood stove.
Yeah.
The ammo can.
Yes.
So what did you write?
What did I write?
Yeah.
I wrote a poem. Yeah. I wrote a poem about, it ended up being about the law of salvage, which has four modes. There's flotsam, which is floating goods that you find after a wreck or that are, that could be on the bottom of the seafloor. There's jetsam, which is stuff that you intentionally chuck off the boat because you're under distress and you're lightening the load. There's lagan, or lagan, that's you mark this stuff with a float. You claim it. You find some stuff you want to salvage. You claim it, but you can't grab it, so you're going to come back. And then there's derelict, where you just dump it and you're gone. So this poem relates to that. It's kind of important. Poem's called Olson's Blue Lagan. Charles Olson Fay, once broken toy of the elder bear, pondering the fate of the blue note, merchild newly minted green. Her anchor still under coiled ropes as the silent, cold, and empty stove. And now drowned mementos. Some things barely valued, now trash, blurred and crying under the pre-dawn low tide. Tiger rides on an orange bottom crane to take the web fingers hold, delivered by silky, oiled-skinned Charlie, under the belly of the note still listing on harbor's polluted, mud-black rack. A few shouts pass over the solemn note. The rear deck kisses the surface. Tunicates making way for the 4-inch pump and its gray snake disgorging the greasy bilge onto the sun and salt-torn dock. The note also rises, blue-footed boob, cowed, untrustworthy. It's time to pickle the atomic four, clear the decks of jetsam, to wait and see if something other than 40 nights' rain was to blame for Olson's Blue Lagan.
Do you have any nautical themes? Void. Right? Well, from things to blame to just the void, which may not be to blame at all.
Do it.
The void. This is called Void Hymn. Your guess as to the spelling, but if you want to know, I'll tell you later. Remember what is merely map. The Pythagorean axioms, the masculine and feminine principles, a map. So too the many sentiments floating up into the conscious mind, old terrain, old dream, old projection, old gods, maps, all. A light shines on them. Feeling fills them. Consciousness fills them. Fills them, or else. Or they'll start to pull. Like all maps, the star maps too provide these forms, which imaginations too often use to fill with paranoia's phantasmic army of placebo. Perfect feast for ego. Life's choice has not dissolved, remains, as ever, toil or let go. Are we a broken people? How old this responsibility, this insecurity? Will I be loved? Like a wave from below, life lifts you anyways. Despite the bargaining, the mind's futile snapping, life lifts you anyway. The thought objects come to me. I see them like the dragons in my dream, empty puppets from a Tibetan play. I hear you. You'll say, in other words, what led you to this insight? What story? What flesh bore this passion hence? Yes, flesh. Not the thought, but the flesh and the passion. The arrival. Yes. Irritate me then, O woman. Send moment after moment to jibe and churn. Tumble me, woman, cast these forms down, the caverns of my hidden life. Till the secret passages sing open, wave after wave, back to the heart of it all. Her music. Irritate, O irritate. Vastness, closer, closer than this breath. Wow. Been on a journey. Yeah. Where did that start?
I don't know, an irritation.
You wrote about irritations too.
Didn't you?
Irritations?
Something like that.
Somewhere in here. Not with as much gusto.
I wrote about irritations.
Craig, I'm just nervous.
Yeah.
It's not gusto.
Yeah.
It's not the right wood stove either.
It's a different wood stove. Can someone feed the stove?
Yeah. I have irritations. I can read irritations. I was not planning on reading this. So the funny thing is, I'm starting at the back end of things.
Upside down, Mom.
Yeah, but on the way here, I promised that I would read a poem that included those ridiculous lights outside the cruise port that they've wrapped around those trees.
Oh yeah.
So.
I love those lights, too.
Yeah. There's two of us. You two, yeah. Not me. All right.
I'll take whatever light I can get at this point.
So I'm like you. I like Gloucester. I'm somehow agreed to live this way. Like something underneath is scared. Scared. Outside, the sidewalk. Empty plastic nips. Broken household trash. Man and woman eating dogs. Hard rock cement pulled up to the chin of everywhere. Like something underneath is scared. Slack power lines strung and tied across the moon. Sky trussed up, city tied down so near the river. Roiling darkness in the air, crack, dark, the deep water, the sky dark above the lights from the It's Never Christmas at Cruise Port trees, and the sulfur lights from the transit mix yard, speckling otherwise dark, dun fudging. In this city, our city, this hard rock concrete covers over all the possibilities, like something underneath is scared. Impossible. This moon, our only moon, still possible, flies up, over, and above these wires. Why do we agree to live this way? Answers? Fish? I have poems about fish. Yeah. Do you have poems about fish?
I don't have poems about fish, but I have poems about something here. how to follow that.
Well, I'm just going to read. That's what I do, right? Excerpt from an unwritten story. You can think about it as this as being in Gloucester. Excerpt from an unwritten story. Pneumococcal pneumonia can strike anywhere, anytime, reads the sign at CVS. Anywhere, anytime. That means it could be right here and now in the store. The sign should read, pneumococcal pneumonia can strike while you buy deodorant and tampons. Which seems highly personal, but that is what CVS is. You cannot go to CVS. You do not go to CVS in groups. You go there by yourself to buy things for activities that you do by yourself, like removing unwanted body hair, making your face seem more presentable, or burning off the wart I suddenly got 5 years ago, which didn't even respond to all the strange chemicals I bought from CVS and applied to my skin with droppers and dabbers and bandages, but only by taping a cotton ball soaked with vinegar to my highly visible pointer finger did this evil growth with roots finally turn black and fall off. But I do not want to talk to you about my wart. And you probably do not want to hear about it. Have you ever looked in someone else's medicine cabinet, only to see strange bottles you do not understand? That is how I discovered my stepdad has some false teeth. And so we go to CVS alone. And we search for ways to cover over, remove, enhance, and treat things we do not like taking place inside or on the surface of our bodies. And it is in this vulnerable state while standing in line with someone that apparently has bunions, and someone else that has a terrible cough but is only interested in buying sunglasses in November, that my coming down with pneumonia becomes a distinct possibility. And I didn't even come here for all those personal items. I just needed some number 10 business envelopes. The kind that self-seals so I don't have to lick the dry glue and get paper cuts on my tongue and feel like I don't know how to use envelopes. And yes, I've tried wetting the glue with a sponge or wet cloth, but the envelope and its contents get wet and then wrinkle up and look so sad, and I don't like to put letters or even bills in the mail like that. What I'm saying is that I did not have to come here. Now pneumonia, which I have never thought about, is a perpetual possibility. And that's the way it is. The other day I was talking to someone as part of my job. We walked around his property and kept the conversation real businesslike, and then we started talking about cancer. And then we shared stories about people we know or have known that have had cancer, and then we confessed to each other that in some ways we are just waiting to find out we have cancer. And I drove home in silence, and that is not how you do it. Now home from CVS, I pour a cool glass of water which tastes strongly of chlorine and at the same time somehow sweet. This water does not come from the ground. It comes from pipes and filtration units, and things are added, and really I do not know where my water comes from. And my wife tells me, while I am pondering, that the water might
tell me while I'm pondering what the water might do to my insides that my daughter's ballet class was canceled because the instructor has pneumonia. And then I hear a few hours later that my cousin's one-year-old is in the hospital with pneumonia, and it is quite serious. And I guess pneumonia is a bigger problem than I realize, and maybe something scary is quietly striking me in my body right now. But I hope not.
That is the most Craig.
So I'd ask if anyone else has any poems about paranoia, but I heard, but I know that's all we write about. So.
Yeah, right. Or humor.
Yeah.
It's hard to write humor. I really appreciate that. About
what you produce. Call that funny?
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
That was funny.
You are all
second to the stove.
Yeah. Are we doing a round robin?
I don't know.
Because if so, it's my turn.
Okay.
Hard act to follow, Craig. I must say,
they all are.
On the other side. Sometimes I wish there were more hours in the day. And then I realize that would mean more time, but no guarantee of change. Maybe I'd end up deeper in. Other times, I want there to be another one of me that can meet obligations and deal with mundane tasks. But a slave is a slave, and that's not good. These aren't the real thoughts. They're hypotheticals, monstrosities. The real ones are witness to the doves and house sparrows while they share a ledge at the water and take turns watching over one another. True thoughts breathe in the fetid low tide and feel pinpricks under shirt sleeves. They convene under a new moon to follow the trails of satellites and falling stars. It strikes me that being a father is an outcome of many lifetimes forming, before and after me, endless processions. They too are real thoughts. With them, I can expand beyond myself and embrace a monstrosity after all. When I see the other side of time, I realize that I've been on the ledge too, next to the morning dove, watching and waiting to drink the cool water where the fish gulp at the surface and danger lurks.
Beautiful. When did you write that? What time of year?
That was September 1st of 2017. Huh. I'm sort of going chronologically here. I'm skipping. Mm-hmm.
I've got one about a mother and an adoption, so that's a connection.
Yeah,
it's two different films.
One. Ellie of the Long Grass, as it's called. Alone among the hay bales, hunting solace like a forgotten ever since, stretching rose-tipped fingers past the edge of the porch, the line of trees, the last ridges dark beneath a long devoured sky. I thought of you in the kitchen carrying your acorn, your plastic violin, embarked on some great project too majestic to explain, still silent and hovering, all eyes and heartbeat and breath-filled wings. Tonight among the hay bales, is it mother or the moon calling? Cannot fix the voices in the hills for all the wind's mad rushing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess on that note, I have a poem about family life, too, in a way. I'm calling this right now, What is Beautiful? The size of the truck, something about driving, and this woman who is my wife turns away from the cast iron skillet where chicken thighs brown and smoke pulls through the ventilating fan to tell me I would never say that to a man, to remind me she is my equal in all things. Maybe our experience is different, but ability is even different than that, and don't I dare try to refute it. It's true. 15 minutes later, she backs the Ram 1500 into the afternoon, dark as night, with wind tearing at the pavement, with rain lining down, and drives beyond Providence. She loads it up and tarps it down, bed filled fast to beat the hail, pees in the Rhode Island woods and drives home in thunder and lightning and time to console both crying children and nurse the youngest down to sleep. Standing still by the kitchen sink, following doctor's orders not to lift anything heavier than a jug of milk, I catch the drift of my own prejudice, if not the extent, the corners of my assumptions lifted. In this case, as in all others, facing the unknown requires enough intelligence to not assume I know what I do not know, to work and to think and feel, like she does, ceaselessly, by flashes of light in the dark, no matter the distance or the task. All right, we're on the theme of family.
Yeah, we're on the theme. All right, fatherhood. Okay, families. Family. I don't know. Fatherhood was the name I named this today. It's a work in progress. My dad is in the ICU again, and this time he needs dialysis. And I have to remind myself to call him because I am not used to thinking about him, because he was never really in my life. Like, when he did not call for over a year when I was 9. And when I finally called him, he asked me where I'd been. And later he taught me to carry my wallet in my front pocket and how to laugh off just about anything, even the cancer he now has. But not in a denial way, but more of a relentless sense of humor way that comes out in times of crisis. But he has never really known where I've lived or what I am passionate about or what my gardening, or that my gardening business does not involve mowing. And now it feels important to connect, but I don't know why, and I'm pretty sure I will miss him. And there are things that I love about him that I don't understand. And it reminds me that I will die and leave my kids behind. I remember my grandmother's sweet, joyful smile. She acquired it after my grandfather died. He was an alcoholic and caused my grandmother to have 11 children and donate it to missionaries even when his family was scraping by, because he believed it was right to give to others even out of need. And he modeled this to his 11 children, who all grew up to be kind parents themselves. At the time, they were afraid of him when he drank, which was all the time, and he moved his family from New Hampshire to upstate New York to try his hand at farming. And the pictures look so idyllic, but the venture failed. And back in New Hampshire, years later, he told my cousin never to learn more than one instrument, so that he would only be bad at one. And that was on Christmas Eve. And he took me, one of 30-something grandchildren, and my grandmother apple picking, and did not talk to me, but he was passionate about music and hummed every note on the classical station as we drove. And it was the first time I saw someone enjoy music as much as I felt it. And he loved talking politics, and it was miserable after his first tall boy, which was early in the day, and he wrote a book in his free time, and who does that? And he died. And my grandmother still talked to him out loud. And she also found joy for the first time, or at least her face expressed it for the first time that I noticed, and I can barely remember either of my grandparents. And what will Emily find What will Emily find when I am gone, and will my kids ever know how much I love them, because I do not think it is possible. Because even as a parent, I am still a little more aware of how my parents failed me or themselves than I am of how they love or hurt or yearn. And I wonder if they even know, and what don't I know that my kids already understand about me, and how can I love them better?
I guess I'll read things. Things. Like the world tends to be, I'm leaving town again. Wednesday morning on a plane to El Paso. Mom transitioned, my brother said, and I pictured her as a man in a coffin. I'll be going to help scrape years of cigarette tar from the walls and leaf through her meticulously kept filing cabinets. I'll be there for my brother Peter. We'll hike in the desert and refuse to be brought down again. I'm most saddened by the love she turned away. Her self-loathing and depression cemented by alcohol into a strange wall of torment. Muted and pale. The moment she died, I was with my family. We were on a tiny hidden beach of red garnet sand. My little one warming herself in my lap after dunking in the main September water. My older one slipping sand-caked feet into sodden flats in a lazy, clumsy way as she and her mother, sitting beside me, contemplated things rich and complicated.
This is a lot of hard work.
It is a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
It's good to spend this time.
Yeah.
Together and by ourselves. And I mean, at the rum line, a lot of writing happens there for me.
Yeah.
And where I can just tune out and not be bothered, you know?
Yeah.
It's nice and loud there. I don't have to talk much.
Did you draw before you wrote that poem?
This particular one, I might have. I didn't bring that with me.
Okay.
But a lot of the work does include drawings, or sometimes the poems are part of a drawing, and then I extract them, or parts of them, and then assemble them.
Because your drawings are comprised of words?
Yeah, there's words often embedded in the drawings. And sometimes the poem, you know, they intermingle, sort of. I don't know. You know, sort of, this isn't very good, just doesn't do justice, but they yes. Thank you for asking.
They want to see those drawings.
They do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody asked me recently if poetry is a way of processing life, or is it therapy, or is it, what is it? And I was thinking about writing every week for the last year, and thinking that it's a way of staying tuned in.
Yeah.
It has been for me.
It's been about place, too.
Yeah.
Tuned into not just my thoughts, but and not just to my friendship with you guys, but also to where I am physically in the world, and and what role I play in my community, even.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I guess it's just part of thoughts wandering, but But yeah. I think all of our work really comes back to place a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The place we are here in Gloucester.
Mm. Hmm. What do you have about place, Pete?
Oh, place or plants?
Either one. Either one. Place. I know you have a
There's
poem.
There's a porch on that.
I know you have a
There's
poem
a
in
porch.
Which you dialogue with a plant.
Yes. There's a guy, Rob Presney, who instead of paranoia thinks that pronoia would be a great idea if you just like think that everything is trying to be amazingly good all the time.
Are you serious?
The universe is conspiring to help your true and godlike self just like come out and hand everybody a daisy.
I like that idea.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. And he like Jungian astrologer, I think he calls himself, among other things. But anyway, he says of shadow, a Jungian idea, that it's like the unripe self that's sort of left behind. And there's a work that you can do where you kind of talk to it. And this particular shadow took the form of a plant, and I happen to have a dialogue. The dialogue takes place in, well, at first it's just me, because this thing, after all, is just an object, right? It's not really me. It's just this little sliver that I left way back when. It's been causing trouble for about 40 years or so. And, but, you know, that's fine. You just stay down there. But then so it sort of comes back, and, you know, I'm just like, oh, gosh, if only. We wind up having a conversation with it. And then, just like a good doobie, you try to sit in its seat and say, well, what would it be like if I was this little sliver? And so that's the 3-2-1 of it all. It's third person, second person dialogue, and then first person where I pretend like I'm the sliver.
Hmm.
So it starts off with three. This is me talking. If I were only to have all plants on my porch, healing plants and herbs, well then that would then I would be okay. Then I would live up to the one who I'm supposed to be, to my friends and in my own community. If I were a gardener, then everything would be fine. I've got to get more plants for myself. Now I have this little chat. And you're supposed to name the thing, so it's Johnny the plant. Johnny says, you're looking for one answer again. Wouldn't a solution won by simple obsession be dandy? I guess it would, I say. Then the problem would be easy for my mind to sort out, and it would be no problem for me to ignore it for a little while longer. Johnny says, ignore what exactly? Uh-oh. The fact that I've abandoned my post. The fact that the demands of this life keep stacking up, and I, well, faster than I feel like I can address them appropriately, I create these little problems for me to solve, because the big one seems daunting, painful, out of reach. It's something to do with when I started smoking, perhaps. I could never quite bring myself to plan for the life the way many of my friends and peers would in high school. That life just seemed like, well, like it wouldn't be enough for me. Not meaningful enough, at any rate. Johnny says, isn't that a bit judgmental? I suppose it is. Johnny says, so you judged that life, the life you thought you saw all those kids going after as being shallow, hollow, meaningless, materialistic. Why? One kid comes to mind, I say. Jason, I think his name was. He seemed only interested in serving himself. He drank to excess, went after the ladies, and spoke about his desires wantonly, with a kind of arrogant pride. I couldn't even believe half of what he claimed to be about. How could he even believe it himself? Johnny says, how could he? I say, I doubt he did. He seemed to be just showing off. He would solicit our agreement, try to establish some common value about it all. He was older, and I didn't have the courage to tell him what I really thought. I didn't have the authority to even decide for myself what I believed about all of it. Johnny says, who took that from you? Well, because that's not really pleasing to me. It isn't? You aren't interested in booze or women or sleeping with Heather Letney? Well, Johnny says, how about being a star athlete then? Going to all the right parties? Perhaps I am now. Of course you are, but not then. I wanted it, yes, but I wanted those things on my terms. He didn't know what was good for him. He didn't know, he was a broken fool, a waste, a sad waste of life and beauty. Look at what he had access to and just wasted it all, wasted it. Isn't this you we're talking about here? I thought you weren't allowed to ask me that. I say, who am I? I'm just a plant. I don't know anything about rules. I say, Jason, he's the one guy I could not be, wasn't allowed to be. To let my desires go, to chase them down despite fear of infamy, to go all the way. Now I hop into Johnny's seat. Johnny thinks to himself, man, he's got some stuff to work out with that Jason character. Meanwhile, he thinks, I'm going to somehow help everyone think he's a real okay mensch. I'm just looking for a little sunlight to ramp up the bliss. Come on, sunshine, springtime, hit me. I'm ready for that sweet annihilation. Bring it on. A little air wouldn't hurt either. He's got to put me out there in the light, at least. He's got to take care of me.
Did you actually talk to a plant?
Yeah, man. No.
Did I? I'm such a literalist, so I don't. It's hard for me. I'm very literal.
You are. I think it's obvious why.
I'm with you there. Okay.
Did you just call yourself a literalist?
Yeah.
Yeah. Estimatable. Sure.
Here's an example.
Even Sigurd thinks
it's fun. It's a great moon tonight, so everyone's looked at the moon, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And it's a beautiful moon tonight. My face to you, autumn moon. You, your heavy, large humor, floating aloof above the rumline roof, implacable, imperturbable, unassailable. How lucky I am to see you. I have good reason to feel sad. Or no reason at all, but under you, moon, a wide laugh gapes my face, bugs my eyes, stretches my mouth, pulls my tongue, splays my fingers towards your oracular benignity. So ha! I blow away those clouds. Away from her face, you shadows, like foam from a fresh poured pint. There's beauty in every crack of that there moon. How much deeper than sadness, this lunatic love beneath the high flying moon. To your plant.
That's another voice, Josh.
Yeah, I know.
I don't hear that voice very often.
No. Only under the moon.
The lunatic moon.
Yeah. Moon poems?
Well, I didn't bring my moon poem. It's too long.
No, no, no. Won't do that.
I brought my ocean poem.
Okay.
Which is the closest thing I have to a moon. I think. It's arguable. The ocean has removed its clothing. The ocean has removed its clothing. I stand in its nakedness. It tries to take off my boots. My heart pounds in my chest. The light shimmers on its bare skin. Its boulders are exposed. Its seaweed is exposed. I dig around in its muck. I bash an oyster from the rock with a stone. I pry open the shell with a knife and take her into my body.
Thank you.
Oyster roll.
Yes.
Fish?
Fish?
Oysters?
Snow?
Snow?
Chickens?
Chickens?
Nouns?
Ooh, snow and chickens.
Mm.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Snow like a cousin. Cold sparrows were roosting with our old maids today. There for the food and shelter, no doubt. A miserable place to a person, but a bird has fewer cares. I shoveled away the drifts of fresh snow and passed the daily rations through a quickly closed door. The hens hopped down to drink and peck at the feed. The sparrows were upset by my appearance and surely settled at the lips of the bowls after I ambled away on the path I just made. All day the snow was the thing impeding and distracting. It was also my fresh air and exercise, my thirst and hunger. It was my social interactions and neighborly commiserations. I used to love the snow like a cousin I only got to see in the summer. We'd catch bullfrog tadpoles and water snakes. We'd pretend to make out under the blankets. We'd take turns standing perfectly still by the feeders, with one finger outstretched waiting, until the electric moment when the ruby throats would alight and still their furious beating to take a drink so rare, a drink at rest.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. I love that one. That's so good. Mm-hmm. I mean, to start with chickens and end with hummingbirds is a profound transformation to my ear. Mm-hmm. I have never thought of hummingbirds when I see chickens.
And I think of summer in the winter.
Right. I don't think of that either. I'm a literalist.
Right.
It's abominable. It's beautiful what you can do, though.
Thank you.
Independence Park?
Yeah,
do one of those.
I do. Okay.
You want to?
That's good. I'm glad you said that. This one's called Buona Sera. I said it like an American. I live in Beverly now and go to Independence Park, which is a place that's close to Salem if you live in Beverly and you're thinking about things being close and far away from Salem. The moon is high and cold and somehow close to Aquarius, the water bearer. An eclipse predicted when she's full. You want to hear my song? Well, tough. I was about to write it all down when this Italian girl and her friend walked over. One said, "Buonasera," and that was that. How they love people, those Italians, after all. Their love of people is like a fistful of aces up every one of their sleeves. I was dumbstruck. Strangers mustn't greet at Independence Park after twilight. Just one of those things. The American of the two girls straightens her friend out. "Get over here," she says. And they both turn their phones on and begin to take magnificent photos of each other and themselves, and somehow they think that the phone finds them more beautiful than I can, which is true in a way, it being dark except for the moon, high and cold. From there to Marblehead, an exodus of little flashes danced atop the deep, each a perfect likeness, precise, instantaneous, each entirely unique.
That's great.
Well,
I don't know where to go. So I'll go fishing.
Go fishing.
This is a poem that I'm working on, for which I have not yet taken critiques from some of my poetry students who are listening to me. So you'll have to bear it again. It's called Bycatch. My children, they hold hands with me, and we cross Main Street on a cold day in November. Half on the street, half up the curb, a friend has parked his truck while he tries to give fish to the hairdresser from Looking Good. My oldest daughter cranes her neck to catch a glimpse of what's on offer. Looking Good guy turns, goes back to his shop. My friend proffers the haddock to me. My son climbs up to the truck bed, puts his face near the silver skin, next to those wall eyes, his hands on the fish box. Oh man, he says. Later on this afternoon, the box will be on our front porch. We will fillet the frozen fish, boil potatoes and bacon, and cook them right up. On Monday, I'll leave my neighbor beer and chowder, glad the conversation will continue. Without capital, it's fish. Here's food. Let's eat bycatch in autumn.
No doubt. That was a delicious chowder, by the way.
Glad you thought so.
There's a lot more in there.
Yeah, there's a lot more in there.
There's a lot more in there. You want to go over here? Any fish? Any fish? What about potatoes or Rancho Relaxo?
Rancho Relaxo.
Yeah.
You should tell people it's down the street.
There's no. This is from just around the corner, years ago. Rancho Relaxo. Sometimes you stood at the foot of my bed after I had already been sleeping, smoking a cigarette out of the window, talking of revelations and whatever you found curious that night. Other times I could hear you playing the clarinet in the early morning street below. Once I roasted a chicken for the first time, covering it with wax paper. I cannot tell you why. Fiery ash filled the apartment in its early evening light. I used to sit in that light on the floor. There was no furniture in the hard room. And eat our dinner, watching the sun sink down over rooftops. Or lay on the floor, papers spread out, drawing with the windows open. Then perhaps stand each at our own window looking out as a way of conversation. The bathroom sink was beautifully white. I have a picture of it. You slept on the floor with just a mat and a sleeping bag, except the time I woke up one morning and you were asleep next to me. The bed was made and we still had our clothes on. Walking late one summer night, we gasped as we saw a swan flying, and then it hit a power line and fell to the ground, stunned. We were drunk and didn't know what to do.
What?
Messy. That's messy.
A long time ago.
So it.
I'm missing you.
What?
That's why I miss Gloucester.
That's why what? You miss Gloucester.
Who wouldn't miss Gloucester? Did you say me? Grace, you said that?
Yeah.
Oh.
she's paid to say that. It helps me get into the next poem.
I guess I'll do something from a long time ago. Into the realm. Raised in a matriarchy in Indiana, beauty was expressed as the color of soft pink white things, or yellow things and blue things. Pollock, Trek, Holiday, and Simone. It was sexy young men, bronze and streamline, while breasts were statements of power, curves not beautiful. Cosmos flowers on airy green mint. Pale petunias in boxes withered and renewed. Beauty was just past the peak of a lightning storm over the lake, when the thunderclaps counted seconds later and later. The deep sky flashes illuminating immense pillars of vapor in the black. The smell of lamb roasting and ash smoke on autumn air. New potatoes glistening with butter and chive. The taste of cold sour cream and hot baked hams. A sense of spirit sometimes infuses me. I feel a lack of self. I stretch into a lightness. Nothing matters but this moment. In minutes or seconds, there is nothing, and yet I receive a wider realm. It is beautiful.
Any time? I don't know. You can just keep going forever.
What should we call it, Amanda? What'd you say?
I don't know why you're asking me.
Because you're the person who says that's.
I would ask her.
Yeah, I would. I would answer.
How are you guys?
What's that?
One more round.
One more round.
Sure. All right. One more round. All right. I want to read it.
The bridge. Do you know the bridge?
You go next.
You sure?
Yeah. One more round, starting with you. Okay. Go for it.
Over the bridge.
Nice.
Over the bridge. Back into the unknown with you, then. Tell me, where does the darkness take you? Do you travel into some delightful abyss? Forget yourself, all your troubles, the cares and worries of this waking life. Where does the darkness take you as your wheels motor northward, away from city lights, up past first granite and on into Essex, where the rocks drop and then rise into the median, a mountain, sequestering your homeward flight, shuttling the lamps of colleges and all the inland chaos into green needles, a bulwark of stone and root, into the dark between city lights. Just you and your two lamps, harrowing nothing but wayward flies. How could I begin to explain it to you? It's like we're dying, not of some disease, but of recalcitrant. And we talk to one another this way as if, well, we won't really be around that much longer. We've probably done just about everything we're going to do by this point. So perhaps you could make the toast a little less crispy for me, or perhaps you could dry the knives before you put them back in the block. That way they won't rust. The good ones, I mean, of course. But it's fine the way you do it, really. At some point, I'm not sure when, I gave up being bothered. This flesh, it's okay. It'll go. I guess the real question is, what will bones beneath have to say? Your poem about the fireflies that urge to remove your skin suit in order to shine somehow makes me think of sex in the movies, of how maybe it doesn't belong up there all lit up and gorgeous and young for the people to see. That there's another thing, in a space much darker, more secret and growing, more mundane and routine, more linked to coffee cups and well-worn toothbrushes next to each other on the bathroom counter. perhaps to a prayer that the kids don't wake up or barge in or skin their knee or something. No time of day, but rather a kind of passing, observed by Day herself. And somehow all those routines turn the cosmos Widdershins, which means counterclockwise, and the sun sees something off in the distance, like an object in arch trajectory descending, glorious on a dark horizon. Rounding the turn and cresting, those spires score the dark. Gloucester, like a bone, jutting out of the muck.
You got something?
This is from early on in the year. The yew hedge. Standing with 1 foot balanced steadily on the top step of an 8-foot stepladder, the ladder being loosely propped against a 12-foot high yew hedge, I lean into the hard swaying branches of the yew and reach out as far as I can with a pair of red bypass loppers, hoping to cut off the last clump of overgrowth in the center of the hedge. How did I get here, I wonder? I reach the first branch and successfully dismember it. With the loppers, I pull the fresh kill back to myself and let my second foot join the first on the ladder. I then huck the branch back over the hedge to the ground without care. The view from my precarious perch is all rooftops and sequent. If you throw them straight over from where you are, they will land on the tarp. I had completely forgotten about Grant. Through the thinned hedgerow, I now glimpse a bit of movement, evidence of the college graduate I hired to help me. I chose him for his large stature. The only thing I know about him so far is that he breathes quite loudly whenever he exerts himself, and he likes soccer. I throw the next branch on the tarp. It is quiet up here amongst this family of evergreen branches. Any sounds from the neighborhood are muted by my woody friends and lost on the wind that has no destination up here. The only way for me to remain balanced is to rest the weight of my body against this arboreal green kingdom. A lively breeze passes through. We sway like the sea.
You want to flip for it?
Flip for it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. All right, you go.
I don't know what that means, but yeah, sure.
Yeah. You go or I go.
I'll go.
I'll go. And you go. You go.
Murmuration.
Murmuration.
The mackerel are elusive sometimes. Other times, they swell in a ball of fury to the surface. They jump and trace each other, like starlings under the meniscus of the tide. Once in the darkness of 40 feet under, I witnessed a ball of pollock swirling. We scared them. I floated neutral in the green water surrounded by giant rocks encrusted with purple algae and anemone. The bronze smooth sides of the fish turned in upon each other and made an impressive stone of flesh. To witness it was a privilege. I traced the fathoms of my lineage, Thor Olsen V, Carrie Bertha Maud Isaacson, but really Dolan. One of four sisters. Who was she? A starling?
Thank you. That's beautiful. I'll end with this one. I don't know what one that would be, but I have more. We'll read them another time. Okay. I've seen the heron work the marsh pools at Dunfudgeon, mid-tide, facing east. Also, crows that tumble with the train in syncopated undulations, a score, calling, cawing, coming their own ways in mass. My theory is that with each day, the entire world is created again, all things in darkness to the flash of sunrise, 6 days in one, all fresh iteration. I imagine the birds, we folks, holding, poised and listening, cut loose to mark the only day there is. Sun up, my train rolls west and I roll with it, as the heron picks its way through habits, as low tide uncovers old work and hulks of possibilities.
Thank you, Ward 3.
Thanks, Henry, for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
I think you guys are great. I really do.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming. Thank you guys for coming.
Yes, thank you all.